in our wide variety of workshops. This is an open retreat. All are welcome to attend. However, we ask that only addicts share in workshops. In accordance with our seventh suggestion, we are fully self-supporting. Thank you for registering. We should remember that our actions this weekend are a direct reflection of Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. Let us carry the message, the NA message, and not the mess. What is the NA message? Our message is that any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and a promise of freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, because that is all we have to give. That no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction. Basic text, page 65. The NA way. In Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma when NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross addicts, or talk about living clean and sober. The clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, is that one drug is separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities and our differences. To the press, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. If many members of the press are present, please come to the registration table where you will be referred to our public information chairperson. We respectfully ask that no pictures be taken during the unity retreat by the press. If any NA members are approached by the press, please refer them to the registration table. Remember, no one person represents NA. Please do not attempt to represent NA to the press alone. Thank you. Please observe the no smoking rule in all the buildings. Okay. Everyone, again, I'm an addict named Jonathan. Welcome to the workshop entitled "More Will Be Revealed." Will you please help me open the meeting with a moment of silence? We ask to still suffer, followed by a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Just for today. Okay, so we have the reading of "We Do Recover" at the podium, please.
Hi, everybody. My name is Regis, and I'm a grateful recovering addict.
Hey, Regis.
We do recover. When at the end of the road, we find we can no longer function as human beings, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter end, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last truth. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in history, a simple way has been proven itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple spiritual, not religion, program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Nice reading.
Sir. I would like to introduce the first speaker. And that would be Lance. He doesn't have where your home group is or whatever he belongs to, but here's Lance for you.
I'm Lance. I'm an addict.
Hey, Lance.
Good. I'm glad I don't have to be nervous. There's only a small group of us. I feel odd standing up in front of just a small group of us. But, more will be revealed. Boy. I guess I should start by qualifying, huh? I'm Lance, I'm an addict, and my clean date, for references point only, because I do believe in just for today, right here, right now, is it. This is all that's real for me. So if you got up before 7 a.m. this morning, you probably got more clean time than me. But October 28, 1988 is my clean date, and I haven't found it necessary to get high or put anything in me to deal with life on life terms since then. And basically because of NA, you know, Narcotics Anonymous. More will be revealed. It's one of my favorite chapters, actually. But I got to tell you the truth. When I first came around here, and I guess it has a lot to do with the topic, because that chapter talks about some specific things. talks about, it's the place in our basic text that has about the animal level, first of all. That sentence is in there, that we're reduced to the animal level. It also has in there some things about in times of illness, you know, if we have to take medication. But probably the animal level and the spiritual growth that it talks about in that chapter, and also about humility and unconditional love. That's probably the three most important things that really strike me about that chapter. So, you know what, I didn't come here with any of that, except the animal level. You know what I mean? I didn't come in here brimming with love. Matter of fact, I sat in the back of the room, and because if you were behind me, you had to be talking about me. You know, or I felt like the whole focus was on me if I was in front of people. I was very self-conscious, or for probably a better word, self-centered, as if I was that important. So I came in here for one reason and one reason only, is because I had to, you know, to get the wife off my back, to get the job back. I still kind of didn't mind wallowing in the pain. You know, it was a way of life. You know, and that's probably one of the things that has been revealed to me over the course of my recovery, is just how strong this disease is to draw that veil over my eyes and make me believe that what I'm experiencing is okay. It's going to be okay. I'll muddle through it. Now, grant you, I do that in recovery, but this disease uses that same type of stuff to hide the fact that I'm dying, that I'm hurting everybody around me, and that I'm just killing myself. So how do I tell the difference on this slanted perception this disease does, you know, that this veil of illusion, you know, the ability to lie to myself or not even recognize who I've really become. How do I do that today? How do I know the difference that my thinking is not flawed every time I think of something? You know, how do I do that? Well, spiritual principles, right? You know, go figure. That's my check and balance. Spiritual principles, group conscience, talking with other recovering addicts, or just talking with other people the way I talk to people here. You know, I've taken what I've learned here and applied that in all my affairs. See, that's what's been revealed to me through here. And not through because somebody told me and I was like, yeah, that's right. It's more because somebody told me I should do it. I didn't want to do it. And then I found out later on it to be the truth. You know, that's the same with the basic text, like I was talking about in the beginning. I didn't read the basic text until I had about a year clean. And I'll tell you why. I was too hip and slick to read anything. You know, I knew it all. You know, I mean, I was in these rooms for a year. It took me 6 months to get a sponsor. You know, I like to tell you it was because I was too hip and slick and I didn't need nobody. But basically, the real deal with everything was I never read my entire life, because if I made a mistake reading out loud in class, I thought everybody was laughing at me. So fear. Same thing with the sponsor. I was afraid to go up to anybody and ask them. You know, when somebody comes up and asks me to sponsor them, it's an emotional moment for me. I don't know about anybody else, but it's an emotional moment because I realize the courage it takes for an individual to do that, that comes around here. Knowing what it took for me to ask somebody, you know, because my mind goes to thinking they're going to tell me that no, first of all. And I believe both sides of the coin, that person is showing up in my life and I'm afforded an opportunity to go somewhere that I've never been before. So I recognize opportunities today, and that's what sponsorship brings me when somebody asks me to do that. And it's not a control thing for me anymore. It's about where's this one taking me, or us, you know. And that's kind of what you know, more will be revealed. That whole chapter is so true, and like my whole recovery, I've experienced it firsthand myself through, School of Hard Knocks, of what hasn't worked in my recovery. And then I pick up the book reluctantly and read and say, oh, yeah, I've just went through that. I've done that more than pick up the book and read and say, oh, I'm not going to do that. I don't know if everybody can relate to that, but I'm not somebody to, I didn't learn about recovery from reading it and then applying it. I came here and did it and have learned that what's in our basic text is common to all of us. You know, it's not unique to me. So that's some kind of spiritual conditioning. You know, I really believe this goes a lot deeper than the stuff. You know, thank God our first step says we're powerless over our addiction. Thank God Narcotics Anonymous in 1953 had the foresight. Man, that is unprecedented in my life, because I tried a whole lot of other places and I looked for the differences. NA couldn't show me any differences. I really believe we need to be true to our traditions on that. That's what's been revealed to me too, because I know there's a whole lot of people just like me that can't identify anywhere else. And if they could, or if I could have, I would have. But it was us that you know, saved my ass, bottom line, you know. It's beyond me or all of us, individually, that premise. And the third paragraph says that in our basic text, in the beginning pages, that we believe we were guided by a greater consciousness, you know. That it's all inclusive, what we believe in this disease. That the substances are not important to it, you know. And that was the first thing revealed to me, you know, because that was, I think that's what really hit home with me is, oh, it's not the stuff on the table that's the problem, you know. And so, you know, coming up on 13 years here in a little while, if I wake up every morning for the next 2 months, I don't plan on using. I don't want to use. Although I do sometimes entertain the fact of those illusions, you know, that veil that the jolt would be nice. You know, I wouldn't lie to you. You know, I still think that, you know, half ounce of cocaine and two nymphomaniac redheads is what I need. You know, although I never achieved that, believe me, I looked for that for a long time, and that never happened. But that's what this disease tells me. Like, I need to wrap something around me or put something in me to feel better about myself. And what's been revealed to me over the years is it's an inside deal out, not an outside deal in. And it's about healing myself, and the only way I've been able to do that is by listening to everybody else and observing everybody else, you know, and burning myself countless of times over and saying, well, that doesn't work anymore. I really believe as my recovery's going along too, what was applicable at one point in my recovery no longer applies today, you know. I came around and said I did the meetings because they seemed to, I felt better when I left. I felt better when I left the meeting. That was the one thing that distracted me. Everybody seemed and talked like I did. That was another thing, all right. I had no clue about spiritual principles. I had no clue where this was all taking me, you know. I know I was tired of feeling like a chemical, all right. But like I said in the beginning, that was acceptable, you know. So somewhere around 6 months, asking someone to be my sponsor, and I had relapsed, so, you know, I was a little tired of this shit. But it could have swung either any way at that time. It could have swung any way at that time. I really believe people being honest about their feelings, and because there was stuff that happened in my first 6 months that a year before that, I would have used to walk out of here. You know, the home group treasurer was taking the money, and we found out, hey, bunch of hypocrites here. I'm out of here, you know? One person's actions I would have used to take a inventory of the whole fellowship and said, this don't work. See, I did that with everything my entire life, you know? I would use one instance and generalize it across a whole whatever the category would contain, and use that to justify my actions, you know? Thank God there was people standing around that were opposite to that and were upset too, you know? Or showed me about being upset over someone taking advantage of the spiritual stuff here, but still concerned about their well-being at the same time, you know, about us using, you know. So I started to learn about empathy and unconditional love here in those kind of instances. Because you know what? That's us, you know. If we were all well, we wouldn't be here, right? Yeah. I remember really getting upset about that once in an addict that actually taught me how to make coffee, John Definitely in South Hills of Pittsburgh. He used to say, I'm John and I'm definitely an addict, so he got the nickname John Definitely. I was ranting and raving, how could he take the money and don't he know and blah, blah, you know, self-righteous now. I'm clean 6 months and I'm like everybody, yeah, you know how it is. And he looked at me and said, you mean there's sick people in these rooms, Wayne? And I had to stop and say, yeah, okay, I get it. But so that's kind of how my understanding or what's been revealed to me is kind of unfolded. You know, 1 to 3 years, I was a self-righteous, worked the steps to die motherfucker, and, you know, this became the N.A. police, the traditions, and all that, and watched relationships entwine in our home group members and just caught up in just becoming a member, you know, and working the first 3 steps. And I didn't work my 4th step till I had about 2.5 years clean. Because I listened to some old timers say, I'm from the Step of the Year Club, and I'm, this kind of disease works for me. Oh, I only have to work a step a year. Huh, what's the hurry, you know? Really, it was, I don't want to do the work, you know? But I did hang. I continued to hang because I knew there was something here. Something that was better. It wasn't the dog-eat-dog animalistic level I had come from, you know. And really, honest to God, there was stuff here that I used to believe in, you know, when I was little. So I guess more will be revealed for me was, I guess I was looking for what I already knew, but I had forgotten or lost, that this disease had stripped from me, right? And that's what it's been. It's been a process of going back to what I already knew in my heart. And what I believe, the God of my understanding, graced me with the day I was born. See, I really believe that I was given everything I need on that day when I come screaming into this world. You know, it's all here. It's all inside me. I've got to, but it's my responsibility to develop it, right? Recovery is my responsibility, not anybody else's. You know, and vice versa. I'm powerless over this disease. I can't make anybody here get clean. Can't keep you clean. I don't believe in a puppet master, higher power. Just got to state that. God, in my understanding, let me kill myself. Doesn't control events. People control events. It's up to us to make our own decisions and pay the consequences. And I believe that across the board, you know. That's how I do my recovery. That's how I do my higher power. Thank God this is America, and anybody can believe what they want. And thank God it's Narcotics Anonymous. You can believe whatever you want. I didn't come in here with a God. It's kind of a bit structured around those spiritual principles that I'm ultimately responsible for my recovery. I do believe, though, that by practicing that stuff and having more things revealed to me, by practicing unconditional love, empathy, open-mindedness, willingness, patience, tolerance, you know, forgiveness, because I used to practice the triangle of self-obsession, basically, without getting into a whole lot of acronyms. Fear, anger, and resentment. You know? I was afraid of life. I would get angry about it, and I caught the resentment. And that's how I dealt with the world. you know. They said, she said, he said, they're going to say, I should have said, I'm going to say, wait till I see them. And I was always living in yesterday and tomorrow. I was never living in the moment, interacting honestly and openly, you know. It was always about working an angle to get what I wanted or to project an image to you for who I wanted you to think I was, that I would fit in and be accepted or get what I wanted to get or whatever. You know, I would change my demeanor to fit in, especially if I was copping, you know, or whoever I was trying to fit into, whatever group, because they had the stuff and was giving it out free or whatever, you know, because it was a party. You know, basic word for that, I would prostitute myself to get high, negate my true belief systems, stand around and watch things go down that, like I said earlier, when I was little, wouldn't have been all right with me, with what I believed in. That's prostitution, man. You know? Giving up yourself for something else. And so that's kind of been revealed to me that that's how this disease works. You know, if I'm not practicing spiritual principles, that veil starts coming back over and my perception. I start making decisions based on self-will, you know. I start making decisions, well, I don't need a group conscience. I'm just going to decide this for whatever body, you know. And that only fits here in recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. That fits in my family structure and my work structure, okay. If I'm not bringing my wife into the picture and my kids, they're in their early 20s, and we're making some decisions, you know, as a group conscience, then, you know, shit just starts happening that makes everything fall apart, you know. So, you know, when my sponsor first told me, you know, get a home group and get a commitment, and I'm like, oh, man, getting a home group is bad enough. You mean I got to get to know people here? Now you want me to show up early and like put up chairs and put out ashtrays and make a coffee. You get a commitment and you keep it for a year. And I didn't understand at that time the single most valuable important thing about that was that for my whole act of addiction, I was great out of the gate. Lots of enthusiasm about everything under the sun, but never finished a goddamn thing. You know, my stuff was finished when I was laying on the couch, getting loaded, and daydreaming up there. I would do the whole whatever to the end, and I felt completed. You know, great plan, great out of the gate, and just peter out. A year later, I had made coffee for a home group every Sunday night, Better Change, Route 51 of Brownsville Road in Pittsburgh. And something came over me when I realized it was a year, that I had accomplished something. Forget that it was making coffee. Of course, I did make the best coffee in the Southfield area, and had the recipe down pat. But it was that feeling of accomplishment, you know, that I had finally, you know, all those years of promises and dreams that never were completed. It was a rush. It's a rush today even to think about it, and that set a whole course for the rest of the time up to now, on because. You know, that was nice. I was like, man, I don't want to go to the meeting tonight. It's beautiful out. I'm like, whatever. I'm enjoying life. I got to go make that coffee. But I went anyway and did it, despite myself. And that's when I started to learn about some other things here. And what I really believe I'm on this planet for as a human being is to give. Because I left a whole long life of taking. You know, that doesn't mean I'm here to be a sucker and abused and be an enabler and all that stuff, but it means I'm here to share, you know, to sacrifice and give as a human being. And that's also what that chapter, More Will Be Revealed, talks about. You know? What else is there to do, man? You know, be a greedy son of a bitch and grab everything for myself and be alone and miserable? I mean, what's the real deal? Yeah. What's this show all about? That's the stuff I ask myself today. You know, what's the worth? What's the worth of all this? You know, if I thought it was all about the way I used to live at the animalistic level, like it talks about More Will Be Revealed, I'm tired of eating dog, you know? I'm tired of eating dog. Just don't work anymore. Doesn't satisfy me as a human being. And that's the stuff I really believe I was given from the get-go. To be a human. Human being, not a human doing. Yeah, without doing for so long. Holy moly. So the home group taught me that. A commitment taught me that. Service taught me that. And I never wanted to be involved in service either. It was suggested by my sponsor. And H&I was, you know, H&I was one of them. And I didn't think about it as being loving or caring, or I'm going to go out and save addicts like some, you know, loony hand and pamphlets out at the street corner or something. I didn't want to do it. I thought it was, you know, too much like missionary work or something. And he said, no, you're doing it because you need to learn how to give without the thought of receiving, because you're such a self-centered, selfish son of a bitch, is how Steve put it. With a little chagrin on his face. He said, unlike myself, who's worse than you. But that was the premise the whole time, is that all this was to help me become humble. You know, that service was not an ego-inflating, controlling thing to get involved in. It is a, just like we call it, servitude thing to get involved in. From sharing a meeting, to making the coffee, to setting up tables, to down the chain of service, to being a world trusted servant, you know, serving the whole fellowship at large, being accountable to all those members, not controlling all those members. You know. there was a point in my recovery, and in Pittsburgh at that time, they would say the third tradition, our leaders but trusted servants, they do not govern.
Amen.
And they would answer, thank God. And I would go, ooh, don't they know how hard I work? How many hours? How dare they say thank God? But you know what? That's exactly what I needed to hear. Because, yeah, thank God I don't govern. Thank God. Probably be a little Napoleon. I really believe we protect ourselves from ourselves, you know, in that. Although I really believe our trusted servants should be given some respect for giving their time, we are so open to ego-inflating stuff here, you know. So a little humility doesn't hurt me. I know that, you know. And, you know, to be honest, there was times being involved in service that it probably was an ego-inflating thing. Thank God there was a little bit of stuff to temper my humility. Thank God they do not govern.
Yeah.
And that tradition, the spiritual principles in our tradition. So that stuff became more revealed to me. That, because I either was up here or down here. I was either better than you or less than you, all right? And what's been revealed to me over the years is I need to be just all right with being equal with everybody, not only in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, but worldwide. You know, I need to be okay with just being another little fur ball scratched along the earth with everybody else, you know, trying to survive. And regardless of where we come from or whatever, you know, I had to come to terms with that because I had such low self-esteem. You know, you hear it all weekend long, egomaniac with an inferiority complex. So that started to bring some balance. And because I would, with this disease, you know, the disease of addiction, the way I work it is, you know, I would work, whip out that stuff with, you might not ask me to do something, but I'll get involved and give and give and give. And then when the time comes right, I'll whip it out and say, well, after all, I've done it. You know, and then cop an attitude, get mad, and think that you owe me now. Aggressive, right? Now you owe me. Because I've done all this. But I ain't the deal here, man. I gotta do that stuff because of one thing. It keeps me clean another day. It affords me the opportunity to meet new people, experience new experiences that just enhance my life beyond belief. I don't know how to put them in words, you know. And that's the God of my understanding. You know, that's what's been revealed to me. Following that as much as possible. to those beliefs, those spiritual beliefs, because I was always looking for the jolt. I was always looking for the payoff. I would always do things for some kind of reward system, right? And this is the way it's worked in my life today. When I go to do things, even in the rooms here, of service or making a coffee, sharing an area, answering a helpline call, doing an H&I commitment. If I'm doing them for some ego-inflating reason, as subtle as it might be, or just to say you owe me now, internally, nothing ever comes back. I got to work for what I'm looking for. I got to manipulate. I got to con. I got to shove things into fit that aren't supposed to fit in the right slot. What's been revealed to me, when I do it honestly and for just the reason of that's what I believe I am as a human being, and we deserve one another to be treated that way, and that's what my time should be spent on, then things start arriving that take me places. I'm not talking about monetarily. I'm just talking about being okay up in here and in here and everything being blended into one. There used to be like two of me blended into one being, and that's the real payoff anymore. Because, I can be greedy and make a lot of money if I wanted to, and don't get me wrong, I like money. It can bring you stuff to make you comfortable. I don't know about happiness, but it will make you comfortable with stuff. But so did the dope. Dope used to make me comfortable for a long time. Comfortable enough to be comfortable in shit. To be comfortable in hell. So I guess to wrap it up, that whole chapter, I read it this morning. I was reading it out loud as I ate breakfast. Like I said earlier, the only time I read the basic text is after I go through all the stuff. So I wanted to touch base with what that chapter or more revealed from our perspective as a fellowship and our group conscience. And I had forgotten that the animalistic level was in there. And I had forgotten that in times of illness, because, I was one of those persons that don't take nothing. Until my sponsor had to have hip surgery and had to be on a morphine drip because they literally cored both his hips, pulled him out of the socket. That's pretty traumatic to the body. And I remember, we all gathered around him like it suggests, he kept everybody close, and he informed the physician, and they took him off before he, he had him take him off long before the doctors thought he should be taken off the morphine, and, did everything the basic text. But I noticed the change in his face the day after the morphine drip was administered. The man that I had come to know and love was tucked away somewhere in there. And the guy I never knew during his using years was kind of out front. So it doesn't matter whether it's prescribed by a physician or ourselves. This disease doesn't know the difference. Once that stuff gets up in us, that disease just lunges forward, forefront. All of that veil comes out. I've seen it. And I've seen it in friends, because I can never see it in me. I'm the last to know. I'll be the first one to admit it, but I'm the last one to know. I've seen it in friends over the years in these rooms that have relapsed, and you can see it. Something disappear. That human spirit you can see it in their face, in their eyes. That scares the daylights out of me, because like I said earlier, that's the thing that scares me the most, is the way, how do I know my perceptions are being flawed? How do I know? And it's only by working the steps, having a sponsor, and applying these spiritual principles that I've found, that have been revealed to me over the years, that to keep that in check. Right now, I live up here in the mountains, and I work in Waynesburg, Pennsylvania. My wife's in Winchester, and we've got a whole lot of stuff going on in our lives. We have three places of residency, and because of facing my fears and learning about responsibility, I found myself in a position where a few men work for me, close to 100 people, and I got to make decisions all day long based on, you know, sound, responsible stuff. And there's a part of me that says, don't you people know? I'm a fucking dope kid. I'm fooling all of you. You know, I don't belong here, first of all. I don't deserve to be here, second of all. Don't you know I'm scared to death? And I wake up sometimes in the morning with a knot inside of my stomach saying, I'm going to blow it today. Because this is just unfolding. I mean, it's been progressive in a positive way instead of in a disease way. And I'm really grateful for the challenges, you know, because this disease wants me to be afraid, start making decisions based on anger and resentment, start imagining that there's all this stuff going on in amongst the organization to, like, attack me. And if I didn't have this program, especially this weekend, it's been so great. I'm really grateful for the committee to put forth the effort to even do this, you know. I probably would be getting fired, and, you know, that downward spiral would happen. You know. I forget on a daily basis that I need to empower the folks that work with me just like we empower one another here. You know, I need to apply those principles in all my affairs. I need to have a group conscience. I need to ask people what do they think is best for whatever area their trade is involved in at the job site or whatever, you know. But I think I got to control every little, micromanage the whole deal, and, like, you know, what do you mean? And I'm my own worst enemy. And that just filters out to the whole show. When I invite everybody in and make them part of, like I learned here, make everybody equal, no matter what level or pay scale or whatever their job might be, knowing that each individual one of them is important to the whole, most important, me keeping my job, or, like here, listening to other recovering addicts, because most importantly, my life depends on that. The same applies there, you know. I'm okay, you know, but I forget that stuff on a daily basis. That's what's been revealed to me, too, that I have selective memory, that when I'm at rest or when I first wake up, this disease is already talking to me. Well, I'm talking to me with a negative, skewed point of view. So I really don't want to separate me from the disease. I believe it's entwined in me. I make it sound like it's something separate. It's really not. A loving God, that loving God that has shown me nothing but compassion, you know, and at the same time showed me that if I want to kill myself, I can go ahead and do that too, you know. What's the choice today? What's the choice? You know, how do I want to live? You know, do I want to pull the veil over my eyes and live a life of hell that I'm not even aware of? I'm wondering why I'm always wallowing, fighting, struggling, angry, mean, lonely, tired. Or do I want to be involved with people around me, being part of their lives, they're being part of my life, and sharing life internally with one another, intimately. You know? And that's what's been revealed. You know? The choice is ours. The choice is mine. Thanks. That's all I have to say.
Okay, next week we have up is Nunzio, and his home group is not on here either, but I guess we'll find out. More will be revealed.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is September 12th of 99. I am a little nervous, but Lance took a lot of that away because he got to go first, which really helped me. This is my first retreat here. I work a lot of weekends,
so I don't get to go to a lot of places like this. I drove in this morning. I got up at 5 o'clock to get here on time. And a lot of things were happening to me on the way that, you know, I was just like, okay, if I find 219 again, I'm just going to go straight to Johnstown and go back, you know. But I just kept running into people this early in the morning who kept guiding me here, you know. So I made it here on time with plenty of time to spare. The first time that, I mean, I knew I was an addict for a long time before I tried to get any kind of help. I remember I checked myself into the psych ward in Pittsburgh, and I guess through my blood work and how sick I was, they knew that, you know, they knew that I'd been using a lot. And I remember staff out there, no staff came up to me and talked to me that much, but one gentleman, the first day I was there, came in my room, and he sat down and he started talking to me, and he was a member of Narcotics Anonymous. He let me know that. I don't think the rest of the staff there knew that he was. And he started telling me some things that, you know, I really had no idea. I never really heard too much about N.A. Where I came from, I didn't know anybody in recovery. I just knew everybody using. So he let me know that I needed to go to meetings. I needed to get in, involved in meetings. And when I got out of there, I was, like Clan says about the fear, I was scared to death. I was scared to death that my family would find out what the heck I'd been doing, you know. Not that they didn't know, but, you know, I tried to mask it with a mental illness of depression and, you know, so nobody would really know what was going on to me. I remember walking into my first meeting. It was like I was holding my breath, and I walked in there, and there was a guy that I went to high school with, a guy that used to work for me, some familiar faces, you know. And people reached out to me, and it was just like I can let go of that breath, you know, and I felt such a relief, because I sat in my car that night. Should I go? Shouldn't I go? You know, I was scared to go. I was also very arrogant, you know, because I thought I was better than everybody that was up there, because I thought I could do this on my own. I didn't need the program, you know, and brother, I really didn't know anything about the program. I think the first thing that, you know, that I found out is the people in the room really did care. They were happy to see me. I think it was the first meeting that I knew this one girl also sitting there, and she said, "I've been saving this seat for you." And I'm like, how in the hell did she know what was going on with me that she had saved me this seat? And I just thought that was so wild, you know, because I just, like, had no idea, you know. So I sat with her that night, and we talked, you know, after the meeting, and that really helped me out a lot. I wish I could say I stayed clean from that day, but of course I didn't, because it, you know, I just didn't comprehend what was going on. It took a few more tries at it. Another, like, major thing that happened that I knew that I needed this program is I ended up in the county jail. And I remember them saying, does anybody want to go to an N.A. meeting? And it's not that I really wanted to go to an N.A. meeting that much, but I just wanted to get out of there for a little bit and go to a different room. And when I went to that different room, Lance had brought the meeting in that day. And I didn't know Lance that well, but I'd seen him. And it just made me feel like, you know, so relieved. It made me feel like I wasn't alone, you know, and I wasn't alone. And it was really a good feeling. After I got out of there, you know, I still just couldn't comprehend that I had to do what was needed, you know. So it was actually people in the room. I had a chance to go to a halfway house, and it was people in the room. Even though I kept using, I knew that Narcotics Anonymous was giving me something, like some good feeling, the only good feeling, because I wasn't getting high anymore. I was just maintaining or whatever. And I had a chance to go to a halfway house, and it was the people in the rooms that that talked me into going. And once I got into the halfway house and was forced to go to meetings every day, I met more people that was letting me know what I needed in my life. You know, it talks about being reduced to an animal level. I was actually below that, because animals take care of their young, and I didn't even take care of my own child. You know, I didn't care if he had food. You know, it was all about me at that time. I remember being, you know, the fear that it talks about. I was scared to death. Even though I still had a lot of that arrogance, I was still scared, you know. I you know, don't give me a reading. Let me sit on, you know, sit on the outside. I didn't like people approaching me. Even though there was something I liked people approaching me, I wanted them to, but I didn't want them to. Because I wasn't sure I wanted to be a part of this. I learned about a new God, a God of my understanding, which was really wild because, you know, growing up, it was just the God that my parents taught me about, you know, and not that I didn't like them, but I didn't know I could just talk to them, you know, like I'm talking to you here. I talked to them for 2 hours this morning on the drive here, you know, because I was, like, really nervous about coming here. And you know, that helped me a lot, just being able to talk to God in my own way, knowing that He knows what's going on with me, that I don't have to explain everything because I have a hard time explaining things sometimes, you know, thinking that maybe He thinks I'm pulling Him on how I'm doing, but it's like, okay, He knows exactly what's going on with me, you know, it's like I'm not pulling Him and I'm not trying to pull Him. So, you know, I got a God of my understanding, which was really, you know, which really got me going. The people in the program I started getting closer and closer to, they, you know, come back, keep coming back. You know, I still couldn't understand, you know, why people would come over to me. You know, I didn't know they did that to everybody, you know, as part of the program. And it just really made me feel good. I started getting some really good friends. I started enjoying being there. But I still didn't get the concept about everything that they were telling me, everything that I was reading. You know, I wasn't doing much reading at first. I would read those little pamphlets. I wouldn't pick up my NA text that much. And it was going to some meetings where we read out of the book that it started interesting me, and I would start reading more. And I found out a lot of questions that I had that I was scared to ask were in there. You know, so when I was scared to ask, I would read through and look for answers, and the answers were always there. I also found out not to be ashamed, not to be embarrassed, to ask anybody questions. Even this morning when I pulled up, because I've never been to a workshop before, because I've never been to a retreat, I wasn't sure on what to do, even though I talked to my sponsor. I still wasn't sure. The first person I seen was somebody from my support group in Cambria County. The second person was from my home group in Beaver County. You know, and I'm like, okay, no questions stupid, so I'm going to start asking some questions, you know, and also Lance going first helped me, because I was like paranoid that I might stand up here and say something wrong and do something wrong. And I, you know, I think that's impossible, you know. So thank God that that's impossible, because it makes this a little bit easier for me. You know, I still struggled a lot in early recovery, and I'm still in early recovery and still struggling a lot. But what I found is I got very humble. I started loving people back, you know, and that was something, like I said at first, I the arrogance thought I was better than all other addicts, because I'd go to the shooting gallery, get my stuff, and leave. I wouldn't sit there, you know. That's how arrogant I was. You know, so I started loving these people back, which brought, you know, even more love to me. And I found a home. I found a home there. I found, you know, I found all new friends, and I watched the people that had some time in the program and what they were doing, and I also found out that I needed to do that too. I needed to not only get a sponsor, but talk to a sponsor. And the big thing was getting over the fear of asking questions that were stupid, you know, and I still have a little bit of that today, but I'm getting a lot more open today. You know, so once I got my sponsor and started using him and started working on my steps, I started getting more comfortable. And, you know, reading the book more, working the program, my life started changing. Because I heard so many times, you got to change, but nobody told me how to change. I needed so much direction that I needed somebody to tell me how to change, tell me what to do and how to do it, because I just couldn't figure it out on my own. I started changing my life and working the steps, and things continued to get better for me. The fear started to leave me, but then I also was had a few problems with the program because I thought I had some better ideas for it, and found out that it was working quite well before I got there, and that was my arrogance coming back. And I had to learn how to pray again the right way and remain humble, And I think that, the being humble is the education I got. I just continue learning. And I was in the car yesterday or the day before thinking about how great it is that I'm never going to get to this point where everything's over, It's a continuing thing, because getting high, I got to that point and there was no place to go except back down. And now I never have to go back down because I'm just going to keep going. It's never going to stop. And that's like the greatest thing. And I don't know why it took me so long to realize that, but I just realized it. The other day I was just, I'm like, this is great because it's just going to continue to get better. I used to be scared of having too many good days in a row. I was waiting for the fall. I was talking to a guy the other day, and he says, the devil can come in your life, in your day, but he doesn't have to suck up your whole day. Give him a second if he takes a second, but get rid of him, and, have a good day. And I know I'm worthy of having good days all the time, but that's what God's given me, It's not like, something terrible has to happen because I've been, everything's been okay. I've also learned to just take things the way they come. I'm coming up on 2 years. I had lost my business like 2.5 years ago, and things keep coming to me as I can handle them. 2.5 years, and a lawyer called me that I still owe the Department of Revenue all this money. And when it was on my machine that I had to call him, I got some fear, and then it's like, I gotta like do what I've learned and just turn this over. And when I called the guy, what I used to do would have been like, I would have never called him back, But I called him back, and I talked to him, and things are going to be okay. I was going to start school next month, and I waited all this time before I started school, and God might be telling me, I'm not positive yet, that this isn't the time to start school, So I'm willing to wait a little bit longer. But I'm also looking for more of the answer yet, because I know the answer will be revealed to me, because I'm not positive on it yet. Maybe I can still go to school and pay this. But if I can't go to school, that's okay. Because I know when, I'm ready to go to school, God will let me know that I'm ready to go to school. So, I just keep searching for answers, talking to people in the program, and it always works out. The power of the prayer today, people praying for me in the program, I know they prayed me into the room when they first met me, and I met the people and went back out. They were always praying for me, and that's what brought me back in. They didn't forget about me. And I know at first they knew I was in the program and I was still using. They didn't condemn me for that, They just kept giving me hugs and saying, come back. Because I knew if I let go of that program, I was gone the last time, So I couldn't leave go, but I couldn't stop using. And they let me know it was all right. You let me know it was all right. And that kept me coming back. It didn't throw me away. Nobody ever shoved me out, My family shoved me out because they couldn't stand to see what I was doing. But the program and you people never put me out anywhere, So I continued to come back and finally got some concept of what was going on. My life today, when I lost my business, I'm in the halfway house. I get a job in a pizza shop, and from there I got a job in the rehab that I went through, and I got hired with 9 months clean as a driver there, which, you know, doesn't really happen. It was the people in NA that helped me get a job, that stuck up for me. And today I work with the kids there, and it keeps me real grounded in the program because I really need to work this program. So they see me working this program, so maybe I can give a little bit to them, you know, because I can't do one thing at work and go out and do something else when I'm out. I don't think there's anything I leave out today, because I knew every time I left something out, I went back out. You know, so today I try not to leave anything out. I've learned how to be a father today, a good father today. You know, the blessings I've got and the things that keep coming to me, you know. I do like a venture-based counseling, which I had to stand on a 22-foot platform and put my hand out to all the kids. And just watching them grab my hand was just like amazing, you know. They trusted me enough to hold on to them 22 feet in the air, you know. And it was just so powerful when I did this the other day, you know. I would have been scared to death to get up there before I come into NA. Most of my fears are gone. You know, like I said, I had fear this morning, but I prayed about it and the fear left. I turned everything over today. I wish I would have knew how to do that years ago, you know, but I guess I needed to suffer all that to get here to learn how to do that. God takes everything away, you know. I can't just sit back and it works out, but he shows me what to do. I don't know. It's the best feeling. That's like the best thing when I worked the steps and learned how to turn things over. I was listening to Lance, but I was still just sitting there turning things over because I get jumbled up when I get in front of people, and you know, my thoughts all just jam together. And most of the time, I'm up in front of kids when I'm speaking, and you know, it's a little bit easier. You know, because I feel like I'm further ahead than them, you know, so they're like, they really take to heart what I say. But I don't sponsor people today because of my work schedule, but, you know, I am there for people. I give my number out today. I do whatever I can for people today. And, I make sure I call people in recovery every day. My number is on a lot of people's recovery list, which I get a lot of calls from people, which, you know, it's just great. I do a lot of reading today. I know I got to always keep up. I look at people with so many years in the program that are always around, and they let me know that I got to keep doing what they're doing. And there's enough of those people in my life today that I can follow, you know. I don't know. I really, I'm glad to be here. I was glad that I was asked to come out here because it was a privilege. And I really don't have anything else to say. So, thank you.
Thank the speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. And could we have the reading of Just for Today from the podium, please?
Yes, my name is John D. I'm an addict.
Hi, John.
Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, to NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new association, people who are not using, and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear. Just for today.
Thank you. Okay,